Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
That kid is back on the escalator again.
Ain't gonna hurt.
Is my boomstick.
Game over, man. Game over.
Welcome to the Marking Bin. He is your host, Ben Mason.
And he is your co-host, Sandra Luketic. And today we're talking 2018's Accident Man. I always mention spoilers. I think I should probably say it here because I don't know if anyone's ever seen this movie except for us.
Shame on you.
Shame. You didn't know about this movie at all until I told you about it.
Shame on me.
And I only know about it because I went on the movie trailer page that Apple has up and saw the trailer for the sequel, Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday. I'm like, what the hell is this? And you see Scott Adkins, you're like, okay, he's in everything, whatever, I don't care. But I clicked on it anyway, and I thought this movie looked absolutely hilarious. So I started watching Hitman's Holiday before I realized it was a sequel. So I stopped, went back, watched the original Accident Man, and it blew my mind. I just had to tell you about it. So there are going to be spoilers, but I really want to hear your immediate thoughts on what Accident Man was. Obviously, I think we're going to have positive conversation here, and we'll get to overall thoughts at the end, as we always do. But Sandro, Accident Man, come on, what's your take?
How do I say this without revealing my hand and showing how I feel about the movie? Maybe one of the best action movies of the 2000s.
Yeah, agreed.
And the fact that more people don't know about it just breaks my heart. I know we've seen a number of movies where, not for the episodes, just things we watch together, where Scott Adkins appears in a small role and you've always kind of spoken highly of his capabilities. And, you know, from what I saw, I'm like, oh, that's pretty good, but he's just kind of like a minor character, cameos, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
This dude should be a lead in Hollywood. I don't understand if it's maybe off-camera problems with him. I don't know. This guy should be a household name when it comes to action movies. In the echelon with the Slys, the Arnolds, the Dolphs.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I don't know if it's a regional thing. Like, maybe he is actually quite popular in England. I hope that's the case. I don't know why he hasn't been able to break out in North America or worldwide even. Because if you look at his filmography, this man has been in everything. And he just keeps pumping out movies. I don't know how he does it. And then, yeah, it's bit parts here and there. But then you get quality stuff like Accident Man. And you're like, this should propel him into the larger spectrum, like you said. I feel like I cut you off there. I'm sorry.
No, that was the whole answer. You said, I don't know how he keeps putting out these movies. I said, well.
Yeah, he does it very well.
I haven't seen him with a bad part yet.
Yeah.
You know, and I haven't seen too many, you know, like, what was it called? Like Daybreakers, Expendables 2. What?
I think it was Day Shift.
Day Shift. Sorry. But like everything I've seen him in, he was fantastic. Although minor roles up until this. And I actually did the same thing. I started watching Accident Man 2 with you. I never actually finished it yet, to be honest. I got to go back and do that. But got partway in and I'm like, I know this is a sequel and I'm enjoying it. It would be a disservice to not watch the first one first. And I've now, since you introduced the movie to me last month, watched it 5 times.
That's insane.
Yep.
I know you and rewatching movies. You'll only rewatch things for the show.
Yeah. To be fair, 2 I always do for the show, and then one of them was the one where I watched it with you when you introduced it to me.
Still, that's 2 times on your own.
No.
Just because. What? 2, 5. You've seen it 5 times. 2 for the show, 1 with me. That leaves 2 more.
I'm not here for math, man. You know what time it is, right?
Game time?
Time to play the game.
Oh. All right.
I got 2 for you.
Shit. I was really hoping it was 1.
Yeah, well, no, it's not. So okay. I can already see how this is going to go.
Obviously, Michael Jai White.
Absolutely.
In the critically acclaimed masterpiece, Spawn.
Oh, what a disappointing movie for such a good actor.
I know. Michael Jai White is another actor who has not been given his due. Yes, he's been in a lot of bad movies, but he's been in some great films, too.
Yeah, he's also had some very minor roles in movies, like one other one that's on our list.
Oh, shit.
That you didn't get when we did Spawn, so not surprising.
Oh, God. Universal Soldier?
You got it.
Shit, yes. Nice.
So there's only one more that was only in one other movie.
And it wasn't Scott Adkins, right?
Correct.
Ray Stevenson?
Nope.
Ashley Green?
Mm-mm.
David Paymer?
You got it.
Oh, no. Oh, God. He just kind of shows up in things. No Holds Barred?
Yep.
Holy shit, are you serious?
Yeah, he was one of the lackeys.
Oh my God, I can't believe I got that. That's crazy. I can't believe that was just a guess.
That was a good guess.
I won. This never happens.
Well, I mean,
except for when it does.
I kind of had to tell you that Michael Jai White was in a second one.
Okay, fair enough. I'll still take it as a win.
I'll give it to you. It's a win. It's a win. It's a win. All right.
Perfect.
Why don't we get into this movie proper then?
All right. So we start off with obviously a well-to-do man drunkenly stumbling home alone. When he gets inside his apartment, he spots a watch atop a bookshelf, which I found very strange, and uses a stool to get a better look. Interesting start to the film. But what happens next, Sandro?
Well, we are getting a narration the entire time by Scott Adkins, mm-hmm. who we also see sitting in a chair in a darkened room, which and the movie suggests is the same room, but in another part of that apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a good plan. Obviously, if somebody walks in and sees a watch, and it's kind of like the only thing that's lit in the room, because when he comes in the suit, that is, the light switch doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
So his attention is being drawn to this little bit of light with a watch, which I'm assuming anybody's curiosity is going to at least have them go investigate. The fact that he is a little drunk probably helps.
Oh, definitely.
And then Scott Adkins wraps a climbing wire around his neck and pulls him as if, you know, to stage a suicide. And after revealing himself, kicks the stool out, takes a selfie with it as proof of his job, and the voiceover further explains to us that his style when it comes to his assassinations is to make things look like accidents, or in this case, branching out a little bit into a suicide.
Hence, Accident Man. How do you feel about the use of the voiceover here?
I'm okay with it.
Me too. Normally, I'm not a big fan of VOs, but I feel like this really gives us a solid introduction to Mike's character in a little bit of an insight into his mind as well. And immediately I'm thinking, oh, this is not the movie I expected it to be at all. And I'm very curious to see where we go next.
Yeah. And it definitely gives you a little bit more insight into his mind, because the entirety of the dialogue that he's having with this is meant to essentially show that he doesn't have an emotional connection to mm-hmm. life. He completely describes that this is just a paycheck. This is a new bike for him, right? And that's not a mentality that most people can relate to, I would imagine.
No, it's not at all. Much like the follow-up scene where Mike goes to a bar called The Royal, which is always filled with his quote of scum and lowlives, he pays off the bouncers and enters and immediately starts a fight, kicking the shit out of multiple patrons to relieve his PMT or post-murder tension.
I love that there's a suggested relationship or history with it where the one bouncer out of the two is just like, oh, come on. like not again. This must happen semi-frequently. But then, yeah, it's kind of we don't need to go over the setup. Their actions already tell us that they've worked this out before. So the security guard who's kind of, you know, unhappy that this is about to happen again can still just know, all right, I'm going on break. I'm going to turn a blind eye to what's going on. So, like, they have a routine set up. And at the very least, they show that Scott, not in the movie, his name is not Scott. Mike is at least going to pick a fight with some guys that are doing something slightly dodgy.
Mm-hmm.
Do they deserve to get their absolute, like, asses beat? That's debatable, but at least he's not just literally going, except for the guy who's just lighting a cigarette at the end. I don't think that guy deserved a hit.
I was going to bring that up. He levels that old guy.
But because, like, he's just one of the people in the bar, and I can't imagine that would require some sort of
beating?
Vigilante vengeance or whatever, right? The other guys at least are kind of being a little bit forward with this woman and, you know, kind of starting the fight after a few words are made. This guy just trying to light a cigarette. There's no need for that at all.
Did you enjoy this scene?
I absolutely enjoyed the fight choreography because this is our first chance to see him actually fighting.
Yeah.
Some of the kills that we get in the movie, like the first one and, you know, a couple others later on, don't actually entail any sort of action from his part. And he's clearly a martial artist. So this scene was absolutely phenomenal to show us, okay, he's not just an assassin, he's also a fighter. And that helps a lot. The only thing I didn't like about this scene, and it might be the thing that I dislike second most in the entire movie, is that he flat out calls out, like, thanks for helping me with my PMT. And it's just like, why? Like, so stupid.
It's pretty dumb.
He throws the money on the bar, I guess paying for a drink or some damages, and like almost does like the wink and the gun to the girl that he helped. It's just like, you're doing so good.
Yeah, this scene is really enjoyable, and the opening scene was as well. My problem is they don't go together, because I love how understated Mike was in the opening scene, and here it's just a full-on over-the-top action scene, which is pretty much what we get for the rest of the movie. I just feel like the setup we were provided was a misdirect, and I don't know why they would have done that.
Yeah, but they're so close together, I think it shows his versatility.
It does. You are correct. It definitely does that.
Because he is a very resourceful assassin. Mm-hmm. Who can assimilate himself to the situation for what is necessary. Like, could he have just walked into that apartment, killed the drunk guy with his bare hands? Absolutely. But he wants to kind of shed off any sort of tail that he might get from, like, authority.
Fair enough. Next up, Mike goes to the Oasis. Basically just a pub for assassins. And we get intros to everyone here. So I'm just going to name them off. I'm curious to hear your immediate reaction. You don't have to go in depth. Just, I like this. I don't like this. Carnage Cliff.
Like him.
Pretty much throwing those darts through the board.
Yeah. He's just the big brute guy. And he's also stupid, which
he is quite dumb, but it's almost endearing, even though the man is a monster.
Yeah, I love this type of character.
Poison Pete.
Don't like him.
Don't like him either.
The whole reason I don't like him is that he might work as an assassin in the context of this world, but later on, when the assassins are actually trying to get Scott, it's like, this guy's completely ineffective.
Yeah. I also don't know why he would be hanging out there. It seems like a place to relax, and he's just in a corner eating nuts or something. Like a rat.
Yeah, this doesn't even feel like it needed to be a bar. It has like six patrons. It could have just been a basement.
Next up, Mick and Mac.
I love Mick and Mac.
It's impossible not to.
Yeah, I think they were done dirty in this movie.
They really were. And this is Michael Jai White and Ray Park. It's nice to see Ray Park be more than Darth Maul.
I would legitimately watch an entire prequel movie with these two as like a buddy cop in an assassin role situation, because they have great chemistry together, and they are, even when you just first see them, they're bickering. They're freaking fantastic.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because yes, they are fantastic, but the banter and bickering between the characters in this movie, some of my favorite parts of the film. It all seems so natural, believable, and it's really fucking funny.
Yeah.
Next up is Jane the Ripper.
Not a fan.
Torn. Why are you not a fan?
It feels like it's trying way too hard to fit into a cliche where none of the other assassins are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the story of the American army brat raised in Japan and trained by a disgraced Ronin. It seems like she has a really cool backstory, but never really given anything of value to do in the movie, except at the end, kind of.
Yep.
Finicky Fred.
I love Finicky Fred.
Fred's great.
Part of that also could be the bit that I saw of the second one, because he evolves into a lot more of a sidekick role.
Yeah.
But even in this movie, in and of themselves, some of their interactions are phenomenal, especially the phone book bet, which we'll get to later.
It's so good. I do like how Fred, he uses incredibly unique tactics, but overall doesn't really trust the internet or technology, which again comes up in the sequel in a pretty funny way.
See, I have a bit of a problem with this.
Okay.
Because I get the whole not trusting the internet, fine, whatever. But, like, they make a point of him picking his victims from a phone book. So, he's not an assassin. He's just a murderer.
I picked up on that as well.
You don't need to use the internet if you're getting, like, dossiers on targets.
Yeah.
He's literally just picking people and potentially very innocent people out of a phone book to murder.
See, I think he is using the phone book to test his tactics that he's developing, and then the successful ones he will use when he gets kill files. So yes, sure. He is a murderer, 100%. He might actually be one of the most dangerous of all of them, but he's also the most lovable, I think.
Yeah, you don't see Mike going and testing out his suicide run on some random person just for fun first.
It's true. That is true. Finally, we get to Big Ray, played by Ray Stevenson, the owner of the Oasis.
I love Ray Stevenson.
How can you not? It's impossible.
Honestly, he is literally the kind of guy that I would love to go to a pub and be a regular at, with him behind the bar, chuckling and telling stories.
I think it would be absolutely terrifying, but I'm with you.
Well, I would definitely not try to cross him.
God, no. Oh, RIP Ray Stevenson, too. Passed away not that long ago. But what a heavy-handed, undeniable screen stealer of a man. He is not on screen that much in this film.
It's a shame, but he's in it enough.
In every scene he's in, I forget there are other actors there, and I'm just paying full attention to what he has to say.
Well, some of the absolute best scenes that he is involved in are the ones where it's just him and Mike.
Yeah. We do get Fred's anaphylactic shock theory and Band-Aid idea, which is incredibly convoluted, but you know it's just going to come up later in the film.
Feels like it should belong to the poison guy.
No? You would think so, right?
Yeah.
That's got Poison Pete written all over it.
Yeah.
I have a note here, which we've already covered, but I just have to reiterate. The plot points in the story of the movie are great, but the characters are what really make it. And it, right down to the banter between them, like I said, with Mick and Mac, much like you said as well. I don't see this movie working with any different characters, but at the same time, I kind of want to see what else they would have come up. But before I can really even start thinking about that, we get what is probably the cringiest line of the movie. And I think you know where I'm going here. Mm. When asked about his new girl, Mike answers, 26, body of an 18-year-old, brain of a 12-year-old, right up my street.
Yeah.
And like, well, we're supposed to like this guy. And I get that this is posturing and just dude chat, but that's a rough one.
That person doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It's just a cover up for his pain. He doesn't want them to know that he is quote unquote weak by still having feelings. So he just makes up this potential woman that, I'm good. Look at me. I'm pulling a great one, you know?
Yep. Put on that happy face. I'm glad you brought that up, though, that she doesn't exist because he's still hurt, because they go right into talking about his ex, Beth, leaving him for another woman who's Charlie, played by Ashley Green. Obvious sore spot for Mike. He's having a real rough time with that. But then we go right into the Assassin's Three Golden Rules, which I thought was kind of forced, but we need to move the story along. So it's never get angry, never get involved, and never get caught.
I feel like that third one should just be a given.
Yeah, right?
And never get angry? I don't know if Cliff makes it as an assassin.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's just a giant raging dude with an axe. He's built on anger.
To the point where he doesn't even know what he's doing while he's doing it. We find out later on he doesn't even know that during a fight that he's fighting Mike.
Yeah, he goes into a blind rage.
Yeah. So we get the introduction to Milton, who's the firm's front man who assigns the hits from the clients, gives up the kill files. And everyone hates him, including me.
Oh, yeah.
But we do get a little bit of humor with the house rules of the Oasis, which is no spitting, no killing, questionable, and no beating up Milton. We're supposed to hate Milton, right? From the get-go.
Absolutely. He is a smarmy, incapable man who essentially hides behind the assassins as his muscle. He is literally just abusing power.
Yeah. And casting David Paymer as Milton, perfect.
Phenomenal. David Paymer is absolutely wonderful in this type of role.
The American trying to be as British as possible for some reason, just enamored with the culture.
And like his timidness is very well portrayed when he's actually confronted with these people as opposed to hiding behind his desk.
Oh, yeah. Coward.
Do you think that possibly Mick and Mac, who initiate the conversation about Mike's ex, are kind of gauging out their future job?
I never thought about that before, but I think you're right.
Because if he had actually said, it's rough, maybe they would have said something, maybe not. I don't know. But upon one of my viewings, I was like, oh, it's kind of weird that they're the ones that keep asking about her. Or not keep, initiate asking about her.
Yeah, because the first time you watch this movie, it feels like they're just being guys being dicks and taking cheap shots at Mike. But upon a rewatch, yeah, I can see that. I really can. That's a good catch.
It might not be. Just could be.
It works, though.
But yeah.
This takes us to Mike's next hit, and that's taking out an accountant. The method of which he does so is very, very interesting. Shooting out the wheel of a passing car using a plastic gas-powered rifle filled with shards of glass.
Yes.
So anybody investigating the death will assume that the accident happened when the car drove over the glass, blowing out the tire and letting it crash into this guy waiting for the bus. It's an interesting idea.
Yeah. And Mike sets it up by saying he's been there like multiple days in a row waiting for the right scenario. So it's not just like, oh, this just happened to all fall in place. No, he was waiting for the right car at the right speed with the right trajectory.
Yes. It's brilliant. Convoluted again, as I say. But this also gives us something that I love about this movie. And that is, this is should be a really intense scene resulting in someone's death. We don't know anything about this person other than he's been targeted. And him being crushed by the car, his reaction, I found hilarious. The driver's reaction is also hilarious. Like, oh, the tone in which he screams. Yeah. But like the really high-pitched, oh my God, I killed him scream. They're playing up the humor in a really dark situation. I think that's what you need to do in this movie, because Accident Man could take a really bad turn and try and be serious, and then it's just another shitty action film. but by bringing in bits of comedy here and there, it makes it feel fresh and really entertaining and enjoyable.
Yeah.
Except then we get PMT time again.
Okay.
I don't want it. Leave it out. I mean, yeah, it gives us more of Mike's voiceover as he freaks out while thinking about Beth. And apparently she was big into the Save the Earth movement, dangerously so as an environmental activist. Some of the plot points here are just really heavy-handed, this being one of them. Because you're like, oh, okay, well, that's going to be a problem later.
Well, he says that, you know, you can't go to a bar every time. So, you know, that's why he's using a punching bag. But it's like, is that PM tea time or is that just working out?
Exactly.
Like, I'm assuming you do that from time to time anyway, considering you're in phenomenal shape.
Yeah. Mike gets a message from Milton saying he has to go pick up the payment for the hit himself. Okay, they're kind of showing us their hand a bit here with where the movie's going, because that's never been the case before, and this is completely out of the blue.
Well, this is the payment for the metal band, right?
No, the metal band is up next. So I think it's because he was rushed to kill the accountant, because if he did it by the end of the following day, he got
double the reward. But exactly. I thought that he kind of did both at the same time.
Well, no, because the Satanic Mechanics concert is, it may be that night, but it does happen in the evening after this conversation. I really don't like the Satanic Mechanic kill.
It's kind of unnecessary for the movie, really.
Yeah, he just electrocutes them mid-song. Honestly, I thought it was kind of unimpressive. And then here is where Mike goes to pick up the payment.
But he is very resourceful and observant, because the reason he's able to pull that off is because he can see they're stacking their amps. Like, it really kind of gives you some baseline knowledge that this guy is smart, and that's why the detective work later works.
Yeah, it really does. I also enjoy how Mike is saying, like, what, halfway through the third song, he would have done the job for free.
Yeah.
It's good. The back alley payment, though, did you call setup?
Oh, yeah. As soon as the voiceover said that that's never happened before, you're like, well, something's got to set this in motion, which it hasn't yet. And as soon as you get something that the main character is telling you, this is not what normally happens, you're like, all right, well, here we go.
What did you think of the fight?
I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was really good. Obviously, Mike's going to destroy this guy. But I'm really starting to enjoy how we get a lot of story and humor and character development. And then it's like, let's take a break. Here's a crazy balls to the wall action scene. Then we'll get back into the previous stuff.
Yeah. And then there's also like his humor while he's doing it. Cause he's like, you know, I like to study pain. And he's asking the guy, did that hurt? Did that hurt? I know that's got to hurt.
Mike calls Milton and tells him about the setup. Milton claims to know nothing about it.
Didn't buy it for a second.
Well, how are we supposed to? At this point, we already know that Milton's up to something.
Yeah, and it's played fantastically by David Paymer.
It is.
Because you can tell right over the phone, you're like, this guy's lying. Which, he's supposed to give you that impression.
He is, yes, but it's just too heavy-handed. I like how we're starting to get a little bit of a weird mystery going on. And later on, it builds and builds and builds. But when you already kind of give away the twist before you start really building the mystery, you're like, what's the point of the mystery then? I think that might be my major problem with the movie. Maybe one of two. So, I mean, I really shouldn't complain. It's a stellar film. That night, Mike gets a call from Charlie saying that Beth was murdered after a break-in at the apartment.
Why?
I don't know.
This is my biggest problem with the movie. Charlie has no reason to reach out to Mike.
No.
She hates him.
Yep.
They're separated.
Mm-hmm.
I get that, like, you know, that's her ex, but do you call every ex for someone when they pass away? When they get killed?
Yeah, it was weird. It's a really weird scene to include.
It could only be potentially to give him information that I also think he does not need to hear.
Yeah. It does pull him into the mystery, though. So maybe it's just a really poorly done way of getting him into the main story. Because without... He doesn't really seem to read the newspaper or be into current events. So I think this is the way that they would get Mike to go to Beth's funeral, where Charlie confronts him. These two don't really know each other at all, but the animosity is palpable, and I really enjoyed that, because they hate each other upon meeting.
Well, I can understand why Mike would hate her. He even says so much later, he calls her a homewrecker.
Yeah.
I don't know why she would necessarily hate Mike, other than that it's the ex, but she's also going through a very emotional time, so I can understand her lashing out.
Yeah, but also apparently all Beth did was shit on Mike. So in Charlie's mind, Mike is a monster of a human being.
Yeah, which again, why call him?
Yeah, I don't know. Get him into the story, right? She tells him that they matched the DNA in the apartment to two junkies who were found dead earlier. And we also learn that Beth was pregnant with Mike's child, or their child.
Why tell him that?
What a torturous thing to do to a person.
Yeah. In that situation, it's like, you didn't know, just leave it that way.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, by the way, you were gonna have a kid, now you're not.
Yeah.
Thanks for telling me?
Yeah. Horrible, mean, despicable move by Charlie. But again, it gives Mike more reason to dig into this mystery. Because he believes the dead junkie story to be a little too convenient. And at this point, I'm very surprised at how much of the mystery turn we're taking. It's not a good mystery, because we already know what's going on. But still, curious creative choice. So Mike cashes in a favor with a detective, getting the police report of the murder and visiting the crime scene. I want to know how he got this favor in the first place.
I don't think you need to know. This guy has a history.
Yeah, you don't need to, for sure. But at the same time, like, that could be a fun little side story. Maybe covered in the Mick and Mac movie you were talking about.
I'd be down for that.
It'd be great to have Mike as a side character. That'd be fun. So supposedly these junkies scaled a building, broke in through a window, smoked crack, Beth got home. They sexually assaulted her, beat her unconscious, and then stabbed her to death. You want to talk convoluted story. I don't know how the police would have come up with this. But Mike doesn't believe this to be the case whatsoever.
Correct. And if they didn't show us how intelligent, resourceful he is, if he just literally walked around beating people up cliff style, you'd never believe that he would come to any of these conclusions. So they set it up wonderfully.
And the weird thing is, like, his detective skills are on a weird Batman level here, which I find really weird. I enjoy the fact that he's super intelligent at times, but he also comes across as being really dumb at others. And it doesn't feel like an act. Like, I sometimes think he is an idiot. And then you get things like him discovering that there was a drug in Beth's system that is used to treat a fear of flying, something Beth didn't have. But he also knows this drug is used as a truth serum and immediately thinks Mick and Mac are responsible. That's some pretty intense deduction to happen in 15 seconds.
Well, I think it's also the fact that when he's introducing us all to the characters, he goes into detail about how Mick and Mac's specialty is making it look like hits from gangs or just rivalries and stuff like that. So two drug dealers... or drug users, I don't know if they were dealers, whatever, users, who also mysteriously show up dead right after, that does fit Mick and Mac's MO.
Yeah, it is very convenient. Speaking of Mick and Mac, though, Mike pays them a visit, confronting them with his theory. I just have to ask, what are your thoughts on this scene? Because there's a lot that happens here.
I love elements of it. I hate elements of it.
Okay, I thought you would love all of it. Please tell me, what are your likes and dislikes?
I understand Mike is going through a lot, but he grew up since he was a teenager in this world. Mm-hmm. When Michael J. White essentially says to him, like, it's just business, Mike should literally know what that means.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Otherwise, I do enjoy this scene. And The other thing I don't understand is why Ray Park is so aggressive with him.
I didn't get that either.
Like, you get it. Michael Jai White is a little bit more delicate, relative term, to the situation, right? He says, you know, like, we just had a job. It was business. You said you were over her. Like, you know, maybe you need to calm down. And then Ray Park's just like, yeah, she's dyke.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay, you're escalating the situation unnecessarily, but...
Yeah, and Mick tries to subdue it a bit and bring it back down, because he does the same thing, calling her derogatory terms. But as soon as he sees a reaction on Mike's face, he, like, puts his hand out to, like, you know, just a second, and then corrects himself and tries to de-escalate the situation. And I think that's why I like Mick and Mac together. Because they bicker. One's a hothead, one's a little bit more level-headed, but they really play off of each other so well.
Yes. And while I have a little bit of issue with the way we get to it, having this two-on-one fight scene is phenomenal and is probably the best hand-to-hand fight scene in the movie.
Yeah. The writing. No, never before have I had to acknowledge how good the writing is in a fight scene. It's just such a weird thing to say, but the action scenes in Accident Man are just phenomenal.
Yeah.
You brought up the point that not only is the choreography good, and this is when we were watching together, but you're like, this is filmed so well.
Yeah, the camera work is done so well that it's not like juting into places. It flows perfectly with the fight choreography in the movie. It's very tough to describe, but when you watch it, it makes sense. Very seldom do you see a movie where, like, the camera adds oomph to a hit.
Yeah. No, it's phenomenal.
It's a delight for the eyes.
If you haven't seen the movie, just watch it. It is so good. But yeah, they straight up admit to it. Like you said, it's just business. It was a job. And it turns out that Milton was the one that gave them the hit.
Which shouldn't be a surprise, as seemingly Milton gives everybody the hits.
Yes.
Except for the phone book, which, again, I don't.
But well, we as the viewers, as the audience, this shouldn't be a surprise to us. So I think they do the smart thing. And when Mike goes to the Oasis, the first thing that happens is Big Ray lays into Mike for what he did to Mick and Mac. So it's like, yeah, we need to say that it was Milton just to get him back to the Oasis. Now let's get into something else. I like Big Ray playing the voice of reason here, which is interesting because he seems like such a hothead that he could snap at any second, but he's also the one trying to maintain structure. So, like, they had a job to do, and they did it. And I think this is our first inclination of Big Ray kind of being a father figure to Mike. He's kind of scolding him, being like, get in line. You know this is how things work. Don't be a baby about it. You chose to be here. These are the rules. Follow the rules.
Kind of the same thing he was told by I don't know which one's Mick and which one's Mac, but Michael Jai White.
Mick is Michael Jai White.
Right? Like, he essentially tells him, like, this is how things run. And I'm actually with Ray when he says, like, you should have come to me first.
Yeah. Yeah. Even him saying that he just found out about the hit and not being happy about it, but staying professional, really adds to Big Ray's character. Even him finding out that Beth was pregnant seems to piss him off so much. Yet you can see on his face he's trying to keep his cool. And then you get that heated conversation, which is absolutely amazing. Right down to Ray smashing Mike's beer when challenged.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's why you don't get on his bad side.
He is fucking terrifying. This is what we were talking about. Like, you would love to sit down at a pub and have him be your bartender and shoot the shit, but you would never get in his way.
Yeah. You want him on your side.
Oh, 100% you do. Especially when he's got that shotgun under the bar on the hinge, the swivel.
Yeah.
Oh, Mike just bites his tongue and leaves. It's a great fucking scene.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best in the film.
That's what I was saying. The best scenes that Ray Stevens has in this movie are the ones where it's essentially just him and Mike.
I'm glad you said that, because now is the flashback giving us the backstory between the two.
I love this whole thing. I'd watch this movie too.
Me too. I just have written, Sandro, your thoughts, please. And then I've got so many notes. Do you want to guide us through how these two encounter each other?
So Mike, I guess it's irrelevant that he was a paper boy, but he was getting picked on. He was getting bullied. He was getting robbed, essentially, by a bunch of kids. In one of the instances where he was fleeing from them, he happened to catch sight of Ray doing a job. And that intrigues him to the point where he follows Ray for a couple of weeks, recording him. Which, okay, I mean, if you think that this might be a source of assistance for you. But then, in a pure show of how brave Mike is, just goes and knocks on his door. And even Ray is like, what is this person doing on my front step? And Mike calls him out. He's like, you kill people, right? He's like, what are you pulling my arm or whatever? And then he shows them the camera work.
And we don't see anything. We just get Ray putting the camcorder viewfinder to his eye, but we get the audio, and it's just a chainsaw and a man screaming.
It's so great. And Ray, the facial expression change is phenomenal. Where at first he's just like, oh, some paper boy is going to try and sell me a subscription. And then he looks in the camera lens like, wait a minute.
He just grabs him and drags him inside his house. But yeah, the whole point, blackmailing Ray to help him kill the bully. What did you think about Ray showing Mike the kill room in his house?
I don't think he was showing him.
Oh, no.
He was going to use that kill room. Luckily, Mike grabbed the plate, smashed it over his head, and kicked him. And this just kind of goes from Ray getting rid of Mike to furthering the conversation. And Ray is just kind of being overwhelmed with admiration for this guy's, like, courage, right?
Yeah.
He's like, hey, little puny kid, but he might have the right mentality.
Yeah, I fucking laughed so hard when Ray's interrogating Mike and jotting every answer down in his notebook. He's like, how long have you been following me? 3 weeks. He's like, okay, three weeks. All right. And he's just like nodding, like he's recording everything bit by bit.
Oh, there's a great line too, because Mike's like, you're great at everything you do, except you might want to work on your surveillance. Because I was able to follow you the entire time.
The chemistry, okay? The chemistry between Scott Adkins and Ray Stevenson, amazing. The chemistry between Leon Finnan, who plays young Mike, and Ray Stevenson, also amazing. Great writing, great casting. This movie is, it's just so entertaining and so well done. But yeah, like you said earlier, I want to see this movie too. This is fantastic. This is a hitman or an assassin training a protege. And we could have gotten so much more here. What is defenestration?
The act of throwing someone out a window.
Yes. Young Mike breaks into the bully's apartment and attaches money to an antenna on his balcony. So the bully comes home while Mike's hiding, sees the bill, and tries to reach it as Mike shoves him off the ledge.
Come on, Mike.
Yeah.
You couldn't have worn a mask, a hoodie, something, anything to conceal yourself.
No, nothing.
You're hiding on the couch in a pile of clothing when he comes into the room, which is already brave, because if he spots that before he spots the money, you're in trouble.
If he sits on the couch, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Now, so, it makes sense for the story what happens next, but it's like you couldn't have covered your face at all, which would have given you the upper hand for the next scene.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. What happens in the next scene?
Well, knowing what he was training Mike for, Ray set it up so that he would get surveillance of Mike committing the crime, And now they have kind of canceled out each other's blackmails.
Yeah. Are we surprised at all?
No. And that's why I'm a little surprised that Mike wasn't like, maybe I should at least put a hoodie on, you know?
He's so nervous about things in general. You think that would be the first thing he would have done. But I have a problem here.
Okay.
If you've got the dirt on Mike now, you know, being Ray, you've got, like, he has the footage of you killing people. You have photos of him killing someone. Everything is null and void, level playing field. Why offer to train him as an assassin?
Well, he's already training him. They have a whole montage.
Well, this hasn't happened yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I watched the movie too many times. I don't have the right order for this stuff.
Yeah, because he offers to train Mike as an assassin, and I just don't understand it, because Ray has nothing to gain from teaching Mike how to be a better killer. And don't get me wrong, I love it. This is great. It doesn't make sense. And then we get the montage.
But it could just be that he genuinely does like Mike, and he does admire his attitude.
I kind of hope that's the case, like, because that's almost heartwarming. Yeah.
It is a little heartwarming. This is it, like, is a father figure for him.
It's so good. But yeah, the montage, like, the chemicals, like the powder on the tray.
Oh, that is my favorite part of the montage, because Ray sets it up perfectly that he has such a bad fake sneeze when you see it after the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets this look on his face like, oh, no. And it's like, this is the kind of prank that an assassin plays on his protege.
But that's like the goofy, over-the-top laughter that you get in a comedy. Then we get like the couch burning, the martial arts training, firearms training. The whole thing is great. This is a wonderful montage.
Well, the couch burning, that seems a little bit more up Freddy's MO, but still.
Yeah. Cut back to present day. Mike goes to talk with Charlie. Obviously, you're not a fan, but I kind of love seeing these two together. Like, we were talking about banter before and, like, comedic banter between the assassins. The banter between Mike and Charlie, I do think, is phenomenal.
I didn't say I don't like Charlie and Mike together. I don't understand Charlie's motivation to give Mike this information.
Yeah. It is a weird pairing, though, but I think it ends up working.
Like, if she just called Mike and said, you know, this letter was left here saying that if anything happened to Beth, to contact Mike and give it to Mike or whatever, don't mention the kid or anything like that, and that's what brings these two together, I'd be fine with it. I have no problem.
That would be even better, because if he then found the note that Beth left for Charlie, that reveals the pregnancy, and that gives him more motivation. It doesn't give Charlie this weird urge to just dig at Mike and give him more to be tormented about. He sees that she was respecting Beth's wishes, but he still gets that information. That would be good.
Well, he could easily find out about the pregnancy if we're writing this movie from, like, an autopsy if he's investigating the crime.
He already has the documents, the report.
Exactly. So he can see on the, oh, she was with child when she died, and then he can grill Charlie about it, and Charlie can tell him it was his child. I'm not saying that it would be perfect, but, like, there are ways to do it where it just doesn't make it seem like Charlie's just trying to stick it to him.
Yeah, it could have been done much better. But yeah, Mike, as I said, Mike tells her that Beth was assassinated, and then Cliff just fucking bursts through the door. And again, the action scenes in this movie, my God, they're so good. And this one is brutal.
But it's also great where Mike is trying to reason with Cliff. It's like, they're fighting. He's like, Cliff, what the hell? What are you doing?
And Cliff's just swinging that axe hard.
I'm curious what Cliff does to get himself in this rage, because as soon as he's through that door, he's gone mentally.
It's PCP for sure. It has to be.
It's got to be something.
Yeah. Thoughts on Cliff's death?
This is one of the best deaths from the other assassins, because it genuinely is an accident.
Yeah.
Like, At one point, Cliff swings his axe, it gets stuck in the ground, and he abandons it. Makes sense? And then when Mike eventually kicks him over, he just happens to land on the axe. That gives Cliff a moment of clarity to realize that he's fighting Mike, and then also to tell him, like, I didn't come here for you.
Yeah, I didn't even know you were here.
Yeah.
It's a brutal death, though, falling back onto your axe. Oh, my God. Although you're saying this is the one that does look like an accident.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that that place is destroyed, and there was obviously destroyed by an axe, and there's a man who is now laying on said axe.
I don't mean for the public. I mean for when he's actually killing the other assassins, his intention is to kill them.
Yeah.
Maybe out of self-defense, but this one is an accident.
Yeah, he doesn't mean to kill Cliff.
If Cliff had just gotten some clarity, I'm sure he would have just walked away like he did with the first fight with Mick and Mac.
Yeah, but he's not Clarity Cliff. He's Carnage Cliff.
No, I get that. But that's why this is perfectly done so that... And even later, when Mike is telling Ray that, you know, the other assassins are gone, he even says, like, oh, end with Cliff. Well, that's just unfortunate.
Yeah. This makes me remember something from earlier in the film, too. The setup in the alleyway. Even after he breaks that guy's neck, he tries to set it up to look like an accident.
Well, yeah, because he doesn't want any attention drawn to himself.
But he acknowledges the bullet holes throughout all of the cars and is basically like, eh.
Well, I mean, there's only so much you can do at last minute. Exactly. He didn't get his normal prep time with this one.
True.
There is a good one. There is a good part of that scene that I also forgot, though, too, where he gets the guy in like this reverse headlock.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, I'm not going to tell you anything. And Mike's like, I'm not asking.
Snap. But yeah, by Cliff acknowledging that he didn't even know that Mike was there, the hit was on Charlie.
Yeah.
Love that. And now we get more plot because Beth was looking into an oil company that wanted to drill in the North Sea. And she backed up all of her research on her father's computer, which I find strange. But Charlie goes to get the data. And then we get probably one of the funnier scenes of the movie. And that is Mike confronting Milton at the massage parlor.
Oh, this is great. First, he has to get by Milton's bodyguard, Fred, though.
I love Fred so much. He's just sitting in the waiting area.
And yeah, like one of the muscles from the actual parlor is like, you want me to get rid of him? And he's like, yeah, I think you should.
I think so, yeah.
And Mike just knocks him out with one punch. And he's like, oh, on the other hand.
Yeah. No, yeah, I have written it. It's like, do you want me to remove him? I think so, yeah. Quick elbow to the face, knocks the guy out, and Fred just goes, he's in the back.
Well, Fred's not going to be able to do anything.
No. What do you think about Mike interrogating Milton after knocking out the other Russian muscle?
I love that the Russian muscle, after he gets hit with, I don't know, it kind of looked like a bedpan, but...
Yeah, I think it looked like a dumbbell to me.
Maybe. This is kind of dark and quick.
It was.
But like... His weight is what pins Milton down.
After a bit of abuse, Milton gives up the name Leonard Kent, but that's it. You've brought this up before, so please, Sandro, tell me and the listeners about the confrontation between Mike and Fred as Mike leaves the parlor.
So as Mike is leaving, Fred indicates that he got a phone call from Ray and that he is supposed to bring Mike back to the bar. And I guess Fred happens to have a knife, you know, whatever. I'm sure he carries something. But yeah. He's not a fighter. And he's even telling Mike, like, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck. Right? Like, and Mike, you know, grabs his phone book and says, well, you're a betting man. If I open this page to a random, or if I open the book to a random page and the name in the top left is over 5 letters, you can take me in. I won't resist. And if it's under, you let me go. And even then, Fred is like, okay, but just don't tell Ray I let you go. And as he starts flipping through the book, he just cocks back and knocks Fred out with it and walks away. And I'm pretty sure we both laughed hysterically when we were watching this together.
It's impossible not to. Everything in this scene is perfect. Everything. It's one of the funniest scenes in a movie that I've watched in recent memory. there is so much charm. We talk about charm a lot on this show, but this is a very charming scene because this is the heart of what Accident Man is. It tells you a bunch of story in a short amount of time with some of the best humor and action. And this scene lasts, what, 45 seconds?
Yeah, it's a very quick one.
It's great, though. Charlie's retrieved Beth's research, makes plans to meet up with Mike. But now we're back at the Oasis, and Big Ray is screaming at Milton. Fuck, he's intimidating.
Yeah. You know, Ray is kind of in a bind here, too, because you could tell he's not happy with what Milton did at all. Mm-hmm. But he also has to, you know, keep order.
Yeah, and he does so by belittling everybody, too. The way he attacks Mac and Mick is pretty harsh.
Yeah, but they get him. Like, yeah,
exactly.
He says, you know, you guys are these two military trained guys, you know, and you couldn't beat up one dude. And they're like, well, you trained him.
He's like, yeah, right. But yeah, Ray actions a hit on Mike because of Cliff's death. Mike and Charlie meet on a bus and we get the lowdown of what Beth was into. So Archie Rudd is an accountant feeding Beth info about skeezy tactics the oil company was using to get their deal passed. And right before they're going public with the info, Archie stopped responding. And that's because he was the accountant that Mike killed earlier in the film with the car.
Ah, bringing it all together. Milton was pulling the strings.
I really enjoyed that, though.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And Leonard Kent, who he learned about from Milton, is a partner in the same firm. So obviously Mike is going to go pay Leonard a visit. I feel like the movie is really starting to fly by here.
Yeah, because now we're getting into the more action scenes and less time in between.
Yeah, so obviously this is going to be a swift beatdown. And it's pretty good, even more talk about defenestration. We learn that Atal Zim is an oil tycoon. He needed things to stay quiet, so an American put out all of the hits. We all know this is Milton, obviously. Leonard even says he has recordings with the American.
Perfect.
Yep.
I don't need that much detail in this. I need just enough to get me to the next action scenes.
Which happens right away, because during the interrogation, Mick and Mac arrive, and crazy action scene. Next note just says, R.I.P. Leonard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he even asks Mike, you know, like, you're not going to kill me if I give you this tape recorder thing, right? He's like, you know, no, but then Mick and Mac come in, guns a-blazing, and kill him instead.
Where would you stack this action scene compared to the others?
It's not as high. It's a lot more firearms. I mean, he does kick a grenade, so
that's pretty fun.
Points for that. Although the grenade doesn't set the place on fire, so it's not very realistic.
Top points. Top points. That made me so happy.
And I love how one ends up killing the other, and he's just like, oh my god.
Yeah, Mick accidentally kills Mac. The hand-to-hand combat between Mick and Mike, some of the best in the movie, as short as it is. It's very entertaining. But yeah, Mike doesn't kill Mick, but takes him out. And then Pete arrives, only to be thrown over a railing to his death.
Yeah, which, like, this doesn't... Like I said, his character works for being an assassin. Doesn't work for any of this, because, like... Why would we at any point believe that he would try to fight hand to hand? He poisons people.
And also, like, when Mike was telling us that Pete is like an expert at poisoning people, here Pete just jumps on his back with a cloth covering Mike's mouth, and Mike fights him off easily. He's like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck is that? Chloroform? Like, that is the most basic way to attack someone.
Yep. Here's another part that I'm not overly keen on. He tells Mike that, like, he was always his prized hit. Why? There's no indication that they didn't get along previously.
Well, Pete didn't get along with anyone.
There's a repeat of this later where essentially we get the same thing from Jane.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, why do you all want to kill Mike all of a sudden?
Because Mike's the golden boy, maybe?
Maybe, but that feels weak to me.
Yeah. Well, there's also that weird cheap shot I didn't understand. After Pete's already dead on the ground, Mike goes downstairs and just stomps him in the face.
Yes, you know, make sure you finish the job.
And then Fred shows up.
See, now Fred's attitude, I understand a little bit more. Whether he's, you know, physically capable or not, he's reluctant. He's just, he's incredibly in a spot. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah. Mike just knocks him out.
Which, again, you know.
Mike doesn't want to kill him. Obviously.
I don't think Mike wants to kill any of them. He has to fight back.
I think he definitely wanted to kill Mick and Mac in the first scene where they fight. He was definitely going for it. But yeah, he takes the poison bandages from Fred and leaves. And now also noticing that the brand is Adkins. Scott Adkins, come on now.
It's a little on the nose, but okay.
It is.
Everybody can have one.
It's fun. Come on, it's comedy, right?
You can have one.
Mike arrives at Zim's mansion where Jane is acting as protection. And here we get the fight between Mike and Jane. I have thoughts here.
Okay.
This is probably the biggest fight in the movie with no setup whatsoever. So it doesn't have any gravity to it.
No, it's another one of these situations where she even says, like, I wished I could be the one to take Beth out, and I have been waiting to kill you. And it's like, why?
Yeah. These are baseless claims. We have no reason to believe this to be true other than you are saying it. There's nothing to lead up to these. There's nothing giving any foundation to these statements.
Like, I get it. Earlier in the movie, when they were in the Oasis, the only one that had kind of like a bit more of a friendly banter with him was Fred.
Yeah.
But they all were getting along.
Yeah. Cohabiting, at the very least. I do have to say that kick through the door, that sends Jane through the door, was pretty brutal. It sounded great. It looked great. Loved it. Probably my favorite part of that fight. Mike kills Jane with her own sword and then decapitates Zim. And then returns to the Oasis and confronts Ray and Milton. The way this movie ends, I absolutely adore.
Okay.
Mike plays Leonard's recordings for Ray, proving that Milton was behind everything. And we get Ray's reaction, which is glorious.
I do love how Milton tries to deny it again.
Yeah.
Up until Mike hits play, and then mid-sentence, he's just like, it was a lot of money, it was greed.
Ray just stomps the shit out of the American.
Yeah.
I love how when you think he's done, he turns around and just kicks him one more time, and the whimper that Milton lets out is fucking hilarious. So good.
This is from behind the bar.
Yeah, you don't see any of the hits connecting whatsoever. It's all action and sound effect. But Mike finishes things off by giving Milton one of Fred's poison bandages. The whole thing was a great setup. Get the best assassin to take out everybody who could let the info leak. I get that. But then we get the standoff between Ray and Mike, which is super fucking tense. And I've been waiting for this since their last confrontation.
I feel like Mike is genuinely surprised as well.
Yeah.
Because after the whole Milton part, he kind of like turns and is surprised that Ray is still in his face and has the gun to him. Because, yeah, okay, it's a little smug, but they had a relationship and Mike did ultimately reveal this like ploy that Milton had in place to essentially screw them all over.
Yeah. So as furious as Ray is, Mike was right the whole time.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a great dynamic. I love it. Ray lets Mike leave with a warning saying, never set foot in the Oasis again and always watch his back. I'm actually surprised that Ray let him live. I really am.
Because their relationship was genuine.
Yes. And I felt like we were led to question that throughout their interactions. Because I thought that was going to be the big showdown. Ray versus Mike. And it wasn't. And that makes me so happy. Huh. Because, what?
I never got that.
Really? Okay. I mean, how many times do you see an action movie where partway in you get the mentor, protege, and then at the end, the two have to fight each other and the protege wins?
Yeah,
it's a very common trope.
That made too tropey.
Exactly, but I think I was so impressed with the movie, at one point I'm like, it has to get bad, right? It's not going to stay good. It can't. But it does. And Mike rides off on his motorcycle with words to live by. Never forget your past. Don't worry too much about your present and live life like there's no tomorrow, because you never know, an accident might just be around the corner. And then we roll credits. Immediately, I'm thinking, holy shit, they actually stuck the landing with this movie.
Yeah.
It ends on a high note and it succeeds. That's why I needed you to watch this movie. Because it really should have been a massive flop, and it just wasn't. There's so many good things about it. But why does nobody know about it? Was it the budget? Was it the release? Profits? Because I couldn't find budget or gross for this movie.
Oh, that's a shame.
I know. I don't know how much it cost. It looked really good. I don't know how much it made, but no one was talking about it. However, it did get a sequel that had a limited theatrical release. So it must have done relatively well. So with that, I say we get into the reviews, because maybe that's why this movie is, it's two movies deep based off of a comic strip. Maybe we get a third. What do you think this movie did on IMDb?
8.1.
Oh, I wish. 6.2.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. This movie's a weird one, though, because I think a lot of people wanted a straight-up action film, and the humor is just peppered throughout, so you're not getting that. And sometimes comedy ruins action for people. I thought it was great. Now, moving over to Rotten Tomatoes, percentage of positive reviews from critics?
74.
83.
Okay, good.
Jeez. Yeah. And I agree with that. I think 83 is proper for this movie, accurate for this movie. Audience score?
92.
65. It seems like critics like this a lot more than the average viewer. It's criminal.
It is a shame.
So you feel like awards?
Yeah. Let's get the taste out of my mouth on those absolutely inaccurate reviews.
It's ridiculous.
Who did you have as your least favorite character?
Poison Pete. Stephen Donald. I like the idea of the character. Didn't need to be in the movie. It's as simple as that. You?
I went with Milton. Poison Pete is not a likable character, but he's not in enough of the movie for me to actually pick him for that.
Fair enough, yeah.
And this is not based on performance at all, because David Paymer did amazing. It's just that Milton is supposed to be despisable, and it worked.
He definitely did a great job with the character, for sure.
Yeah.
What about your favorite character? Because I was thinking about this, and I couldn't decide on who you would pick.
I was torn. I ultimately went with Scott Atkins as Mike.
Wow. Okay.
I was very tempted to pick Ray.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I feel like at the end, I was essentially flipping a coin, because I could have gone either way.
Fair enough. What about Mike? Do you like so much?
He's a likable hero. He's intelligent. He's good at fighting. I would watch an entire series of movies with this character.
Yeah. I really want this to be a franchise of films, not just the original and a sequel. But I had to go with Big Ray, Ray Stevenson.
I can't argue with that.
Yeah, I said earlier, he's just so commanding when he's on screen, and he's entertaining. He is so entertaining. I love the character, because he's not a good guy. He is a badass assassin who has no regret, but you see him getting a little bit softer as the story progresses. You see his appreciation and like taking on that father figure for Mike. And then you see him continue that later on when Mike's having trouble in life, but still sticking to the rules. Like, he is his own character in this movie, and I love it. And Ray Stevenson's great in pretty much everything I've seen him in, but I just love the character of Big Ray. So while Mike is absolutely amazing, and yeah, he is a close second, I had to go with Big Ray.
Okay, what did you have for your favorite or most memorable line?
Oddly enough, it includes Pete.
Okay, I think and I know which one you're going to say.
Yeah, it's when Ray puts out the hit on Mike. He's like, so it'll just be us five? And Ray snaps back, fuck me, it speaks. Like, Ray has no fucking time for anyone. He's going to belittle you and get his point across immediately. I love that character. You?
I thought you were going to go with the line where Scott is, or Mike is describing Pete, and he's like, yeah, even his parents hated him so much so that his only bath toy was a toaster.
That's good. That is very good.
That's what I thought you were going to pick. It's not what I picked, but when you said, oh, it involves him, that's what I thought you meant. Mine was actually from the alley ambush for the money pickup.
Oh, okay.
Where he's berating the guy who attacked him, and he's like, you know, you could have done this, you could have done this, you could have done this. And then he goes, but no, you decided to surprise me on a not-so-silent motorbike, shooting off a close-range weapon in every direction but the right one.
Yeah, he's pretty funny and smarmy. Mike's good.
Oh, it was so good. And it's exactly it. There's like that hint of sarcasm that I've always loved in my protagonists.
Yeah, that makes sense for you. It totally does.
Yeah.
What's your memorable scene?
The crime investigation. Honestly, I know it's very Batman-esque, especially if you've played any of the Arkham games, where like they even recreate what's going on in his mind. But it comes together so well. I think it's done ingeniously. Some of the motivations are questionable, but that doesn't mean that they didn't absolutely nail the execution of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to argue that one. Very well done. It is a standout scene in the movie, for sure.
It's not an easy pick, though. There's a lot of good ones to pick from.
Yeah, I'm torn between two, but I'm going to have to go with the montage of Big Ray training Mike. It's just so fucking funny.
See, the problem I had, because the other two that were in heavy contention for me were the fight against Mick and Mac in the dojo.
Yep.
And the other one was the Ray training him. But I'm like, this feels like so much more than a scene. Like, it's a whole segment of the movie. And I can't pick, like, I would have had difficulty picking between the montage at the beginning of it or at the end of it and the interrogation when, like, Mike first approaches Ray and they're sitting at the table and Ray is, like, mouthing things as he's taking stuff down on his notepad. Like, nodding. It's just way too long to call it a moment or scene, even though it's all phenomenal.
Yeah, for me, it was the montage as soon as the music starts and you take out any dialogue. But that entire scene, that backstory, is my favorite part of the movie.
Easily, yeah.
The runner-up for me for memorable scene, why I was having trouble picking, was it was Ray kicking the shit out of Milton at the end of the movie.
No.
There's so much comedy in one of the most violent scenes.
It's tempting to say that the best line was Milton's squeal from behind.
It really was. That's a very good point. We over an hour and a half into the movie and I'm still laughing. Like, normally the comedy has tempered out a bit. But even then, like, I'm cackling at points in this movie.
Okay, so final thoughts on Accident Man.
Absolutely amazing. It's a wonderful film. I highly recommend it to everybody. It, like, Scott Adkins, his charisma is, I mean, we likened him to the British Ryan Reynolds, right?
I believe I said that when we were watching the movie, yes.
Yeah, he commands your attention. Handsome man. With a perfect delivery, a wonderful actor. His martial arts abilities are top notch. Like, I don't even know how you describe that. The movie is well written. It's well acted. There's a bit of mystery. The action's great. The comedy's great. And when it's over, you just want more. Like, it's a hidden gem. And I wish more people would watch it. And that's why I say watch Accident Man. And when you're done, go right into Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday. Because somehow, I don't know how, but they make it even funnier. And the action scenes are on par. What are your thoughts on Accident Man?
Oh, the only thing that I can think of now is, why don't we have a martial arts Parent Trap with Ryan Reynolds and Scott Atkins? Honestly, I can't say much more than I already have. Watch this movie. Give Scott Atkins the recognition that he's so severely deserves and is not receiving.
Yeah. Probably one of my favorite movies I've seen this year. And it's November 23rd as we're recording. So take that into account.
You know me, man. I'm an action movie guy. And this one is found its way like near the top of the list.
Yeah, same.
So those are our thoughts on Accident Man. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us, you can hit us up on social media. We are on Twitter at BSBargainBin, Facebook.com/BSBargainBin, BSBargainBin.com, and YouTube.com/@BSBargainBin. If you've made it this far, please leave us a like, subscribe, leave a comment. We are getting buried in the YouTube algorithm, and we could use any help if you enjoyed the episode. Ben.
Yes.
Feels like it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you picked a movie that I'd seen so recently. I'm kind of waiting for a movie I haven't seen.
No, I've got one.
Oh, I don't like how you say that. So with reluctance, I ask, what are we watching next week?
I have been torturing you with the threat of covering this movie for years. So next week, we're going back to the 90s and we're going to cover 1996's Biodome.
Oh,
the Biodome, a pure self-contained environment where five scientists are about to be sealed off from every conceivable form of contamination except one.
Well, check out that mall, man.
Our dream is finally at hand.
What kind of mall is this?
Get them out of here!
The doors are sealed for 1 year.
We're stuck here.
That's right.
12 months?
Yes.
52 weeks?
Yes.
385 days?
Now, the whole world is watching as Bud and Doyle are separated from their loved ones. Learn about endangered species.
They're the rarest Lepidoptera in the world.
Experience nature firsthand. And become world-renowned protectors of the planet.
Purple sticky punch, or hemp, is an excellent source of photosynthesis.
Just because we're stuck in a bubble doesn't mean we can't cause any trouble.
On three.
This winter,
welcome to paradise!
Pauly Shore and Stephen Baldwin,
trick or treat,
are doing whatever it takes.
I feel like a duck-billed platypus.
To put the mental back in environmental.
Well, can you at least make it taste like?
Until next week, have a good one.
All the best.